Welcome to a very special edition of the Florida History Podcast and Tropical Depression. I'm Carter Krishnire, and Ryan Ray joins me, and we're going to record this and release this on both podcast streams. Ryan, Bob Graham, our beloved greatest living Floridian, passes away this week at 87.
Thanks for having me today, Kardec, on this date. And yeah, thanks for coming on as well. Bob Graham's death marks the passing of probably the most giant figure in our state's political history, in many ways, maybe even broader than that. It's nice to be with you and remember a great man today with you.
Yeah, and Ryan, Florida would not be what it is today, or what it became, and maybe we're in backsliding today, actually, without Governor and Senator Graham. So let's start in the 1970s, before Bob Graham is governor, and he is the leader of a faction called the Doghouse Democrats in the state Senate, which was an institution that was blocking Reuben Askew, Governor Reuben Askew's progressive reforms for the state. The House was with Askew. The people were with Askew. Askew won 2-1 when the Pork Chop Gang tried to put up a primary against him. He won 2-1 in the name of Ben Hill Griffin Jr., by the way, was the guy who ran against him. Insignificant.
Big time. Huge crushing win for the reformers there.
Yep. And then same thing in the general election against Jerry Thomas, who had switched parties, who had been a previous Senate president as a Democrat. And despite this, despite public opinion throughout the state, despite the growing urbanization of Florida, it was a cabal, for lack of a better term, of panhandle legislators led by Dempsey Barron, who is one of the most significant legislative figures in Florida history, who was a Democrat from Panama City, but a very conservative Democrat and an opponent of anyone who read the St. Pete Times or the Miami Herald, and he would say that openly. It was Bob Graham who, as a state senator from Dade County, led the faction that stood up to him and backed the governor.
He had forerunners before him, obviously, including Leroy Collins, but yeah, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that Bob Graham helped drag Florida kicking and screaming into the 20th century when he began his career. And of course, you know, I think it's important to note his father was a state legislator as well. And he comes from Means, right? Which is an interesting part of his story. But yeah, he was absolutely the first figure to break through and kind of take us into our modern times, representing a statewide coalition of urban dwellers, of a not rural agrarian background majority state legislature figure that we've ever seen. And I think that the countless reforms that shortly led us to what is remembered as the golden age of Florida state politics is directly in many ways because of him.
So Askew pushes progressive reform, wins big in 74, 78 comes, and Bob Graham decides to run for governor. But there's several other significant, better-known statewide figures in that Democratic primary, not to mention that the Republicans nominated Jack Eckert, who had run statewide before and was really well-known and had his name all over a drugstore chain. You had Hans Tansler, the mayor of Jacksonville. You had Bruce Mathers, the son of a longtime U.S. senator who was the Secretary of State at the time. You had Bob Chevin, who was the attorney general, and you had Claude Kirk, a former governor who had switched parties and become a Democrat, who had been was the first Republican governor in 100 years and then left the Republican Party and became a Democrat to run in 78. Graham goes into that primary a decided underdog, and he's got the Pork Chop Gang, he's got the Dempsey Barons, he's got all of these moneyed interests working against him.
Yet, a murderer's row. I mean, yeah. This is like AIF and Ron DeSantis and everything pointed at you.
Yeah, exactly. And he is able to finish second in that primary, get into a runoff, beat Bob Chevin, beat the big money, beat Dempsey Barron, beat all of that those interests who were trying to stop Graham. And for Barron, it wasn't about, oh, I prefer Tanzler to Chevin, or I prefer Smathers to Kirk. It was, I want to stop Graham.
Of course.
Graham wins. Absolutely. Graham wins.
Same. Yeah, go ahead.
And he wins, Ryan, because he had that common touch, and he wins because he did something called work days.
Yes, work days. If I could, I'll probably mention a few times my, you know, slight connections to Graham world. In 2014, I was able to work for Bob's daughter, Gwen Graham's campaign for Congress, and she continued the work days. I was, you know, fortunate to attend a couple. Bob Graham was very much involved in that campaign, and the work days were very much the essential material of who Bob Graham was. Michael Grunwald, the great writer and reporter, just the other day said of any politician's book ever, including General Grant's memoirs, his favorite political book ever was Bob Graham's book about his work days. He did real shifts, hundreds and hundreds of real shifts of real jobs, of everything from being a line cook, you know, being a bus driver, being a clerk in a local government, you know, being a clerk at a grocery store. And he did real hard work. And he saw his project as probably the most transcendent figure of the New South in Florida, right up there anyways, was absolutely closely tied with his very fervent association with working people. He saw that, he said, if there's going to be pushing back against these bourbon Democrats and the pork choppers and these Republicans that are ascendant, for people like him, New Deal Democrats like himself, he had to stay with the spirit of working people and the working class. And interestingly, as kind of a Rooseveltian figure himself, I think his deep connection with the so-called common touch, his incredible charisma, but really his just genuine empathy and compassion for normal people is something very absent in today's right-wing Tallahassee politics. And I think it was the secret, ultimately, of his success.
Yeah, and I, from a personal standpoint, can mention, I met Governor Graham for the first time when I was 7 years old in 1982, leaving a Miami Dolphins game. And Graham wasn't there to be sitting with the owners in the owner's box or any of that sort of stuff. He was there because it was a work day. He was working the production board for the Dolphins radio network or whatever, the local radio broadcast in South Florida for that game. And then I met him several more times during his term as governor when I was by that time not even a teenager, still a kid, because my dad worked for NASA. My dad, who passed away last year, by the way, worked for NASA, and we would make trips to every shuttle launch and be in the VIP area. Even though we were living in South Florida, I mean, he would have to go to Kennedy Space Center regularly and for every launch. So Graham or his lieutenant governor, Wayne Mixon, who, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit, they were at every single shuttle launch. It was very much a part, the space program, of Florida's identity. And so this is the next thing I want to cover, Ryan. Bob Graham, following on the heels of Ruben Askew, made Florida kind of the... taking the space program and encapsulating that throughout the state, the image of the future, the progressive future for the United States. We had Disney. We attracted Epcot Center, and it opened in 82 when Graham was governor. He was there opening day.
Epcot, of course, was this kind of futuristic, future-looking, you know, kind of urban design of the future sort of program that was kind of coextensive with the New South and really Governor Graham's project in a way.
Yeah, and then we had high-tech Florida. Started innovation started under Askew again. Graham took it to another level. We had IBM with a huge campus in Boca Raton, which a lot of people don't realize now. We had a situation at the time where computers and chips and this stuff was being done in Boca, not in not up in White Plains where IBM was based, not in Silicon Valley. The personal computer, which I think, which you and I are both using currently, right now, at this moment, which everyone uses on a daily basis, was invented in Boca Raton by a UF graduate who was a Jacksonville native. in Bob Graham's Florida in 1981. And that is a testament to where we were. And we had commerce missions to Europe that Graham would send his Lieutenant Governor Wayne Mixon on. We were attracting more and more high-tech companies to Florida. We were very much the futuristic state from an entrepreneurial and technology standpoint, while we were the most progressive state under Graham in the country from a government reform standpoint. That was Bob Graham's Florida, Ryan.
Yeah, I've thought about him so many times going across the Bob Graham Sunshine Skyway.
Yes.
Connects the Tampa Bay area down in Sarasota. And just what a tribute that, what a fitting tribute that was to him. And it really was the best spirit of Florida. I mean, they call him Mr. Florida. I would kind of balk at that kind of direct association, but I think it's just so true with him. I mean, in many ways, he was carried the torch of the better angels of what Florida can be and has been. It's obviously not lost on anyone who's listening to this, probably, but the state government right now is putting off this very narrow-minded vision that is explicitly undoing the work that he put together in what's called the Golden Age. And, you know, Bob Graham's risk-taking, his ambition, and his connectedness at all times, carefully, scrupulously, through excruciating note-taking and self-reflection that he was constantly doing, so unusual among politicians. And I think it was part of the constellation of what elevated him to such greatness.
So before we get to the note-taking and his tenure in the U.S. Senate and his time as a national political figure, although you could argue it started when he was governor because he gave the nominating address in 1980 for a renomination of President Carter at the Democratic National Convention where was the DNC in 1980? Detroit? No, that was the RNC. Wherever it was, he gave the nominating speech. And then
distinction.
Yes. And in 1982, he won re-election by a huge margin, carrying 66 of 67 counties. The only county he didn't carry, predictably, was Collier County, where Naples is, which has always been Republican. Against Congressman Skip Baffolas, who was a pretty significant figure in Florida. So he was facing maybe the strongest possible Republican. 2 years after Ronald Reagan had won the state and Paula Hawkins had won a U.S. Senate seat, he gets reelected overwhelmingly, 65-35, in what was a great year for Florida Democrats. Democrats come back with over 30 seats in the state Senate, over 80 seats in the state House, huge gains in the 82 election, which leads to a second term, Ryan, where we have initiatives around the environment really pushed. Growth management laws are tightened. They're strengthened. Concurrency laws are strengthened. And we have two legacy projects, Save Our Everglades, that comes out of that time, and Save the Manatee, which, by the way, would never have happened without Bob Graham and him taking the leadership role on that.
That completely is exactly the spirit of the incredibly ambitious challenges to power that comprised and animated his career. Yeah,
and so environmental issues were never very far from Graham's thoughts, because he had...
The common turn of phrase, save the manatees, there's no question that it would be in the mouths or the minds of the vast majority of people without him himself. And I would say that when you think about a individual person and a large expanse, a biome, or just a place as large and massive as the Everglades, I think that he's maybe the single-handedly the greatest champion of adding land to conservation. Maybe, you know, certainly in the state, but I think that's got to reach into the country and the world when it comes to what he's done with it.
Yeah, especially east of the Mississippi. Florida then develops the best state park system in the country under Bob Graham. A system where we bought back more land to preserve land. And not all of these state parks I think people who know me know that I have a state park pass every year. So do you, Ryan. You go to all these state parks. A lot of them, yeah, a lot of them are areas you can't visit that are just conserved areas within state forests or state parks that were acquired in buyback acquisitions with Graham and the legislature that was ushered in 82. The kind of overwhelming progressive majorities, breaking the backs of the Dempsey-Barron faction to where Barron from 82 to 86 was
huge
on the back foot.
Support.
Yeah.
Huge. It's hard to even think of these days. In these days of dribs and drabs and Democrats losing by just a little bit and then more recently by a lot. But, I mean, these are some of the most enduring. I mean, I think that Bob Graham stitched together the largest Florida statewide political winning coalition maybe possible. Like, the laws of political physics maybe asymptotically approached what he put together. And whether it was the greatest one possible ever, certainly I think it was the biggest one that anyone, in fact, has ever put together. And it was one of the rare, in a state full of transplants and a state with a short institutional memory, one of the very few people who has broken through and still, towards the very end of his life, from the middle of his career and early on to the end of his life, enduringly popular political figure of a kind we will probably never see again.
Yeah, and as I've remarked to you before, I don't think endorsements from other people mean a whole lot, right? Other elected officials, they like to think they're important, say, oh, I endorse such and such, and that's going to move votes towards them. The only elected official I've seen that's able to really transfer votes in this state is Bob Graham when he would endorse someone and campaign for someone. Although I would say maybe within Republican primaries, eventually Jeb Bush had that same effect, where if Jeb Bush endorsed someone in a Republican primary, they generally would do better than they would have otherwise. And part of this was that common touch, that connection. He coined the comment, the Cincinnati effect. Remember about transplants to the state, because Graham was very much a Floridian. As you mentioned, his father, Cap Graham, had been a state senator. His family owned the Washington Post. In fact, television stations in Florida, channel WPLG in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami market, and WJXT at one time in the Jacksonville market were owned by the Washington Post and the Graham family, to the point where Richard Nixon went after those television stations because of the crusading journalism Katharine Graham was advocating for the Washington Post. So he came from a reform-minded family. He came from an ag family that was also urbane, yet had this common touch because he came from money, which propelled him, Ryan, in 1986 to beat Paula Hawkins in a U.S. Senate race by 10 points in a bad year for Democrats in Florida, in a year where he was facing an incumbent Republican who, by the way, was not that conservative. She was conservative by maybe Florida standards at the time, because Florida, you couldn't be an out-and-out conservative and win in Florida in the 1970s and 1980s.
Yeah, no, she was somewhat of a St. Pete Timeser Republican.
Yeah, yeah, she may not be a Republican today. I'm not sure Paula Hawkins would be a Republican.
Probably
honestly.
Not.
Yeah, and I'm positive Jack Eckerd, who Graham beat in 78, would not be a Republican today. I can guarantee you that. I mean, Eckerd might be on MSNBC and CNN denouncing Donald Trump. That's how much the Republican Party in Florida has changed.
David Jolly.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, right. From the same town, too, right? Same county as Jolly. So 86, he wins, becomes a national figure. But in the U.S. Senate, Ryan, his key focus isn't, hey, I'm going to gain power, I'm going to chair this committee, I'm going to set myself up to run for president. His key consideration is using his perch in the Senate to help Florida.
He gave us his very peak form, the most vintage, the highest and best years of Bob Graham, who had already been a true master of his state's politics, proved it and proved it and proved it again, undefeated, right? Who had been unusually curious and interested and intellectually stimulated, he, you know, obviously carefully it was known, and it's had many impacts in many ways, but he was known to basically document every hour of his life in these notebooks. Yep. He kept hundreds and hundreds of notebooks that basically documented this very interesting man's very interesting life. And he brought all of that to bear, truly, as one of the most creative, one of the most original, impactful legislators ever in Florida's history. I mean, you've got to go back quite maybe to Senator Claude Pepper in terms of someone who just had the pure national impact of a Bob Graham that he did. And he, in many ways, midwifed Florida from this middle of the pack in population and in many other ways kind of state to a top handful state. And the way that that happened for Florida, staying in one piece even, as hit or miss as that been over the years, is because of the positive influence of Bob Graham in the federal government.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think the only other figure that comes close to him and Pepper is George Smathers. But Smathers, it was because he had influence with whoever was president, Kennedy, when Nixon was VP, Kennedy, and then Johnson. It wasn't because he worked the process for Florida. It's because he could go to Lyndon Johnson, who actually also was the Senate Majority Leader for a large portion of the time, and say, hey, you know, we need money for this or that. It wasn't quite like Graham's influence, although I do admit, like, without Smathers, we may not have Biscayne National Park. Without Smathers, we may not have some of the protections that happened in the Everglades prior to Askew and Graham taking the lead. So as much as I've had ideological issues with Smathers on some things, I will concede that. So that is Graham taking that lead. I want to mention to you, like, he was great with constituents. So the first ever letter I wrote to a politician, Ryan, was in 1989. I was in ninth grade, and I was very concerned about the management of Eastern Airlines under Frank Lorenzo.
Who wasn't, right?
Unless you're just a corporate, a robber baron type. I was very concerned about the union busting. And I wrote a letter to Senator Graham's office, like, hey, you know, Eastern employees. And remember, Eastern Airlines was the largest private employer in the state of Florida at the time. And
a huge factor in Florida's economy, DNA at that time.
Yeah, a huge factor in Florida's growth. And part of the growth you're talking about in the Graham era, from a mid-level state to being a top five state in every metric and maybe the most progressive state in the union, was Eastern Airlines. So I wrote a letter to Graham's office in ninth grade, like, hey, the federal government needs to intervene. Maybe the state was unwilling to do anything because Bob Martinez was the governor, needs to do something about this. I got a letter back from Graham's office immediately about, yeah, we're concerned. We want to have some sort of strike board, something to resolve the labor dispute at Eastern Airlines, which, by the way, was passed and vetoed by President George H.W. Bush, who was notoriously anti-union, despite, you know, whatever historical revisionism there's been about him. But Graham was very concerned and obviously had pushed that issue of Eastern Airlines and wrote back to me, a high school student, when I said, hey, I basically see the economy around me in South Florida going to pieces because Eastern can't operate with this. I don't even know what to call Lorenzo. The union buster is a simple term. I think there's probably a more colorful term. But that's the first time I had ever written to a politician, and I got a reply back. And here's the thing, Ryan. I thought that was standard because Bob Graham wrote me back. So I would start writing letters to members of Congress, calling congressional offices as a young activist, and learn, oh, wow, my senator is really special because he's different.
That's such an interesting anecdote, because you literally had a better idea of Florida because of Bob Graham. And I think it's the same way with so many people. You know, again, I had the privilege to work just a little bit, work with him in the 2014 campaign, got to know him. He signed my copy of America, the Owner's Manual, a great book.
Oh, wow.
He authored with Chris Hand. Yeah, at an event called Grilling with the Grahams in Marianna in Jackson County, where his lieutenant governor, and then for a short period governor, right, a few days, because of Bob Graham becoming a U.S. senator, when Mixon in Jackson County, I saw the effect that Bob Graham had on people. There was an event that they did in 2014, that great Gwen Graham campaign, one of the only red to blue flips in the entire country in a very, very difficult year for Democrats, 2014. Gwen Graham won against a Tea Party Republican out there. And I saw Bob Graham, older black people, older conservative, sort of rural-coded white people that were around, you know, from Bluntstown, from Apalachicola, came to these events just to see Bob Graham. And it's amazing. I've never seen a Florida politician ever have that kind of effect on people. I, in the same course of that campaign in 2014 for Gwen Graham for Congress, I had an occasion to spend some time at his Angus Cattle Ranch in Albany, Georgia. And I felt, first of all, the place was just so incredibly Bob Graham, just like this idealized version of him that we're talking about, that this man really seemed to be this kind of very understated, extremely nice, pastoral, but understated. It reminded me of Camp David or something like that. This extremely sort of quiet, exuded a Jimmy Carter dignity, but somehow even more purely Floridian. And I just experienced Jerusalem syndrome just being and inhabiting this man's space because of what he was and what he stood for. He was not like, let's say, Bill Clinton or others, you know, Southern governors that became national figures. He was truly on a transcendental kind of mission to make the world a better place in this incredibly unusually carefully shepherded political project that this man made of his life. And I hate to rhapsodize, and I think that it's good to be skeptical. You can't, you know, fall in love with these people in power sometimes, but it's hard for me not to just have a true admiration, a true love for the man. And I know we're getting a bit far afield of where we were, but I mean, I don't think that I would live in Tallahassee, right? The same way that you said your idea of what a public servant was elevated because of an early experience you had with Bob Graham. You know, it's the same way with me. The spirit of Bob Graham, that reforming, crusading spirit that he brought, attracted me to the state government and attracted me to living in Tallahassee. Aside from the material connection that kept me here, you know, in 2014 working on his daughter's campaign, which was, you know, precious. But just the idea that something like that could prevail in the state government, and that there had to be some countervailing force to what we see today that's inherent within the makeup of Florida, is what attracted me, and I think you too, in a large degree, to this process to begin, because we saw that what Bob Graham did was possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think is really what inspired me and made me care about Florida so deeply. It isn't just the politics and the public service. Graham's Florida tie, I went out and bought it in like three different colors and used to wear it when I worked in Washington, when I worked in Tallahassee, wear it constantly. So speaking of which, I wanted to give this anecdote about my history with Bob Graham. So when I'm working in Washington, late 90s, Graham comes down the Capitol steps. I talked to him. He's with Senator Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island, who would pass away like a year later, unfortunately, be replaced by, Senator John Chafee from Rhode Island, who would be replaced by his son, Lincoln Chafee, very moderate to liberal Republican, classic Northeastern Rockefeller Republican. I talked to Graham about the budget and like appropriations for Florida. And we have a great conversation, and, you know, that's that. A couple years later, I'm working for Democratic candidates in Florida. Might have even been the period I was working for the FDP. I meet Bob Graham again. He had written down notes about me in his notebook and remembered me and talked about that meeting on the Capitol steps because of what he had written in his notebook and what he remembered. And that those notebooks, Ryan, and this is so important for people to understand when we talk about ideology now. My view of being progressive is being very transparent, being very forward-looking. Graham, because Graham took such copious notes, because Graham was so detail-oriented, we, the people of the state of Florida, were represented in every meeting. he went to. Every time he walked into a room. There were no smoke-filled rooms in Bob Graham's Florida or Bob Graham's Washington when Bob Graham was in those rooms. There were no backroom deals in Bob Graham's Washington or Tallahassee. What we had was we were represented. And I know that sounds so cliche-ish, but that's how I feel about it, quite frankly.
I think that's true. I think that he kept us all with him, probably more than any other figure of that time. You're so right there. And, you know, that same purifying sort of effect that he had, shedding light wherever he went and really bringing critical reflection and self-reflection to the process in a way that political figures so rarely do. I think that, I mean, we might as well just go ahead and talk about, you know, his later service and 2000.
Let's see, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
You know, some people say, and again, I trust your view. Some people say apocryphally, like I believe that if Governor Graham was made Al Gore's vice presidential nominee in 2000, that no matter what happens, whatever hanky panky happens in butterfly ballots, I think that Bob Graham has such an influence that Al Gore would win that election no matter what. Some people say that one reason why he wasn't chosen, he was shortlisted, a very shortlisted for that spot by then Vice President Gore. In 2000, some people speculated that his careful note taking and that lack of a smoke filled room is something that maybe kept Graham out of that position because some were afraid of that.
Yeah, and I think as someone you and listeners, you can just Google my name and the 2000 recount. I was intimately involved in that recount. I in fact was at a very high level in Palm Beach County when it happened. I was one of the first people who reported. On the butterfly ballot and was rallying support and working with the lawyers in the days after. But throughout that 36-day period, Ryan, my thoughts were we would not be here if Al Gore had made the right selection.
That's got to be right.
Yeah. You know, this would be over and done with. Florida would have been carried easily by Gore. I mean, I still believe Gore won the most. There are more people who intended to vote for Gore in Florida than intended to vote for Bush. But we all know what ended up happening. And the Supreme Court gets involved with its then conservative majority. But here is what then happens, which I think is really significant. So George W. Bush is awarded Florida's electoral votes by the U.S. Supreme Court. Bob Graham is not on the ticket. So Bob Graham is returning to a Senate that is a 50-50 Senate. Then Jim Jeffords from Vermont switched parties. Harry Reid convinced him to switch parties a couple months in. And so the Democrats then took majority, 51-49. Graham used his perch after 9/11, which was this devastating event for America's psyche, and there was this rally around the flag effect. One man in the United States Senate stood up and said, "Okay, let's pump the brakes on some of this, and let's look at this from a very intelligent and intellectual way." And that was Bob Graham. Now, there were people who were ideologically to the left who opposed any sort of military use of military force, and articulated that, right? The likes of Carl Levin and Barbara Boxer and Jeffords, who I just mentioned, and Lincoln Chafee, who I mentioned earlier, they all voted against the Iraq War. Ted Kennedy, Robert Byrd, right? Robert Byrd gave a very I think one of the most memorable speeches in the history of the U.S. Senate, right, in opposition to the authorization. But it was Graham who, unlike his colleagues, who had made their decision based on political calculuses, right? That, oh, I've got to go vote for this war because, let's say you're John Edwards or John Kerry, because I want to be president, even though I might not agree with it, or a Republican who just said, "Oh yeah, you know, let's bomb the heck out of these people," with obviously the exception, as I mentioned, of Lincoln Chafee, who was a Republican. There was ideological or political reasons for 99 of the 100 senators doing what they did. There was one senator who said, "Okay, I'm very much kind of on the fence about this. I need to learn more." Read the intelligence. Listen to the testimony, given to the Intelligence Committee, listen to the testimony given to the Foreign Relations Committee, and then determine, based on all of that, the case for war is not only flimsy, a lot of it is just sort of manufactured.
Completely. Completely true. I don't think that there is any higher real-life profiles and courage example that you can think of than his brave stance, going against the grain, against every current of momentum to do that, because simply he knew, he thought, he and looking back on it, knew that it was the wrong thing to do and that the evidence didn't add up to it. You know, I remember watching on C-SPAN at the time these conversations, and, you know, of course, you had Bernie Sanders in the House vociferously opposing it, and others, like you mentioned. But again, so many of them were playing their part and singing the song of what you would expect. Bob Graham split from consensus, the national security establishment, many, many, many in his own party, his own compatriot, Florida Senator, as you've pointed out, Bill Nelson, who voted for it. And he simply did so because he didn't think it made sense to go to war. And I think in the book of life, it's hard to overstate how important that was and how richly history and the people of Florida benefited from it. In many ways, you know, the fact that he used his incredible mind and his perks that he has earned, the most some of the most hard-won authority and credibility that anybody's ever earned, he used that to very unpopularly in those elite circles, right? Like you said, he always was, the public interest was always in his breast pocket, right? He made us present in those rooms. You know, he really made the case more loudly than any elected official, anybody in public life nationally, about the Saudi ties to the 9/11 attacks. Others, so many wanted to turn a blind eye to that. So many were so quick to believe this Iraqi-oriented explanation. But just because of the truth and the material facts of the matter and Bob Graham's intellect and Bob Graham's integrity, he said, look, this doesn't make sense. And to consider a man like that who had been in elected life for 25 years at that point at the highest levels, you know, been on Air Force One countless of times, seen, sniffed the rarest air that there is to experience in that kind of life, to go against everybody staring daggers at him in those rooms and to say what he said, which we know today is just the plain truth. It's an incredible gift that Bob Graham gave to the world.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's so well said. And I would add to that the intellectual curiosity he had that others didn't, right? There's so many public officials who just don't care, right? These are just kind of votes, and their votes cast for whatever reason on both sides of these sorts of issues. So Graham cast that vote the end of 2002. The Democrats lose the majority in the Senate a couple of weeks later. But he spends his next couple of years before he has kind of an aborted run for president and then retires from the U.S. Senate. He spends his next couple of years articulating his views on this war. And it wasn't something like this is another thing that happened. A lot of Democrats who had even opposed the war, once the war looked very successful initially, fell in line. You know, I remember even Howard Dean, who had all this popular support, falling in line saying, well, now we've got to just win the war and win the peace and all this stuff. There were very few that fell completely in line. Al Gore was out of office, so maybe it was easier for him because he said, you know, he gave a great speech at Harvard. Hey, how dare they attack our patriotism? How dare us? How dare they? At the same time as his former the president he served under, Bill Clinton, was making, you know, kind of these very moderate statements about the war and trying to triangulate as usual. Graham continued to articulate his view about the Saudis being behind 9/11, the Iraq war being unnecessary. And then even after he was out of office, 2005, 2006, he's writing op-eds for The Washington Post, which, as we mentioned earlier, was in the family, right? It was owned by his family at the time, sold to Jeff Bezos, I think, in 2011 or 2012. But he Jeff Bezos, someone who grew up in Bob Graham's Florida, by the way, I should mention as a corollary there. But he was he was articulating this view about the mistakes in American foreign policy in the Middle East, the mistakes in faulty intelligence and not reading the intelligence correctly and kind of selectively looking at some intelligence over others, unvetted intelligence. He continued to beat this drum even out of office, which was so impressive. And then, Ryan, I want to get to our, or at least my most recent interaction with Senator Graham. It may have been yours also because it was after Congresswoman Graham's campaign. 2016, the Graham Center, you and I are both on the panel there with Senator Graham. In Gainesville for their summit for Florida's future. And Senator Graham at 80, he still had the sharpest mind in the room. He was on the front edge of issues like climate change and sea rise level and things like alternative fuels. And he was talking about this stuff openly in 2016, in a prophetic manner. And it just gives me so much pride. You and I were on the stage with him. I actually, for part of that symposium, I was sitting right next to Governor Graham.
I remember it was a great honor. I was with Susan McManus.
Yeah, yeah, with Professor McManus from South Florida, University of South Florida. But he still was on the leading edge of these issues, and he was so concerned about what sea level rise was going to do to Florida, his Florida, at a time we had a governor in Rick Scott, who would not even acknowledge the term climate change.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is no, he was in so many ways the better angels of what Florida was. I mean, the vision of what we could be, he held, you know, in himself. He really was sort of, he did seem to be a totem of the New South in many ways, but really just the spirit of Florida that all of us like and feel good about.
So let's end on this note, Ryan. You and I grew up in a Florida that Bob Graham created or helped create. I you know, obviously Askew, Childs, others are so important in that vision of Florida. I mean, I would even say, you know, the likes of Buddy McKay and others, so critical. But I think more than any other figure, Graham reflected the optimism, the sunny side of Florida, the cosmopolitan nature of the state, the diverse nature of the state, the concern about natural resources and growth management. And quite honestly, I can't imagine a Florida without him. And I don't think Florida would have happened the way it is. To steal his friend and colleague Buddy McKay's term, how Florida happened. Florida does not happen without Graham and McKay and that faction of Democrats standing up for Governor Askew and fighting back against MC Barron. And then Florida doesn't happen the way we think of Florida if Bob Graham is not governor for 8 years.
Yeah, he was probably the greatest. My thoughts are with everyone in the Graham family and Gwen, and with everybody, I know that I think we both cried, you know, thinking about the death of this man. I'm certainly feeling a sense of loss, and I mourn him, and I really appreciate taking some time to remember him today with you, Cardiff, my friend.
Thank you, and same with me. I condolences with the entire Graham family, including Gwen, and it took me about an hour, Ryan, on Tuesday night. I mean, this is where we'll finish talking about when we heard the news. I started writing right away when I first heard the news. And it took me about 45 minutes to an hour, and then I just started sobbing.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just losing Governor Graham, Senator Graham, but it was also, okay, the Florida we loved now is truly gone. Because Senator Graham, Governor Graham, was the last kind of link, active link to that. Buddy McKay, I should mention, is still alive. He's hit 90, but, Graham was so much the embodiment of that. And I thought about, my goodness, you know, his daughter could have been governor and maybe things would be very different, the outlook in the state. But yeah, that's where I was Tuesday night. What about you?
Yeah, no, it did touch me. I found myself moved by the news that we had seen it coming for some time. His health had been failing. But to those who felt his influence in their work, there is nobody that will replace him. And he is someone who meant a great deal to me. And I still feel we are reeling as a state. The loss is incalculable, but I know that he gave probably the greatest body of work as a civic leader to Florida. We have benefited so much from it. You know, I wish that, rest in power, Governor, Senator Bob Graham.
Well said, Ryan. And thank you, everybody. We'll be back. Ryan will be back with a new tropical depression soon, and I'll be back with a new Florida History podcast with Robert Bucciolato real soon. Thank you for listening, and rest in peace, Governor Graham.